Welcome to the latest edition of GBB Live. My name is Sean Coleman. Hope wherever you are and wherever you are listening, you are having a wonderful start. You know, a great Sunday evening. If you're in the Mid-South area, definitely hope you're all right after that recent storm. But if it's a Monday morning, hope your week gets started off well. Another potentially exciting week. If you keep up with the Grizzlies, as last week certainly was probably a bit more exciting and in a bit different way than many had anticipated. But here with me once again to break it all down when it came to the draft is a very, very well-known draft mind in Grizz Nation now. Many knew him before, but he has been a man on many different paths and shows here recently. His name is Chip Williams, once again joining us. Chip, how are you doing, sir? Good talking with you again.
Yeah, great to talk to you again, Sean. I'm doing great. Always appreciate the invite and always looking forward to talking some hoops with you.
Absolutely. If you're listening to this on Sunday night, going into Monday morning, Chip will actually have a great breakdown article about the guy that we're going to spend a good portion of this podcast talking about, and that's G.G. Jackson, the Grizzlies' 45th overall pick. Now, we may not necessarily get so much into the Grizzlies' other pick. Could you please pronounce the Grizzlies' other pick correctly, Chip? The one that the draft stash at 56?
Please don't ask me to do that.
Is it Tiber Bajborovic? I'll have to look him up real quickly.
Arik Bajborovic, yeah, something like that. I think you're right.
We'll get to that in just a second, but I'll be honest with you. We're going to go with what Chip knows, and that definitely is the game of G.G. Jackson. And also expand the conversation a little bit. I know that a fun conversation has been the youth on the Grizzlies roster over the past few days when it comes to social media, but we're going to talk with Chip about, you know, kind of continuing the conversation that he had from the Anthony Sane show on Friday, really looking at the Grizzlies' young depth moving forward next season and beyond. But Chip, you know, let's start off, you know, really where, you know, I think many people are interested. With the Grizzlies going into this draft, from Zach Kleiman's comments on Thursday evening after the draft, he basically stated that their focus was going with the option that would allow for them to keep a roster spot open as the Marcus Smart trade was still being finalized. But basically to go with someone that offered a lot of intrigue that will be willing to accept a two-way option. And I really think that that's what they did. They just went with the guy. They went with the guy who offered the most upside that would accept a two-way option. So when it comes to conversations about G.G. Jackson, I think that's, you're going to hear the word upside probably within the first 10 words. What about G.G. Jackson just makes upside stand out about him? What makes him drip with intrigue and upside, Chip?
Yeah, I think what's interesting about G.G. and really the attraction, it doesn't take you too long when you're watching him play to just see that really big guy, like 6'9", about 215 pounds, nearly a 7-foot wingspan. So he's obviously got really good size for kind of a combo forward, 3-4, probably projects as more of a 3, but it's the shot creation. You know, it's his ability to create separation on ball, one-on-one situations, and get his shot off. The percentages aren't great. He took a lot of really bad shots. I think we'll probably dive deeper into that as we go throughout this podcast. But yeah, I mean, if you were asking me, like, what's the elevator pitch for this guy? It's a massive wing who is basically the size of Paul George when he was coming out of Fresno State, who has a track record of now creating his own shot at multiple different levels and was at one point, you know, the top prospect in his class at the high school level. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of where we are with G.G. on just like a very surface level.
Absolutely. And you know, we talk about the fact that, you know, with the guy that size, what stands out is that you typically do not see that ability to have shot creation. But just looking at some of the highlights, and I'm going to go with your expertise on this the more, I know that guys G.G. size can occasionally create their shot. But even though the accuracy was not there, when it comes to G.G.'s shot creation skills, Chip, does he have – is something that stands out about him, the resourcefulness that he has? Is it just the fact that he has quicker twitch, you know, muscles, you know, movements, what have you? Does that just naturally get him open? Or do you see at this point there actually being, you know, some impressive, you know, IQ, some intelligence going into his moves that help him be able to consistently get his own shot?
Yeah, I think when you watch him play, you can tell he's a guy that played a lot of one-on-one basketball when he was growing up, right? He probably went to, you know, his friend's house or open gyms or whatever and just played a lot of one-on-one basketball. He's just got kind of this natural craftiness and ability to create separation. He's got a pretty tight handle for a guy his size. I would say his general dribbling package is pretty rudimentary. He's got like a crossover. He's got kind of a snatchback and that leads into a step back that creates him some space, but it's a tight handle. He's got a pretty low turnover rate. And the games I watched the last few days, he very rarely made mistakes dribbling the basketball. So that allows him to create some space. But yeah, he has got a decently quick first step. I wouldn't say it's, you know, lightning quick or elite or anything, but good enough to where he can get past guys. And for a guy who played until he was 17 years old through December in college, he's got a pretty impressive understanding of how to use his feet to get him places, you know, how to use his footwork, step around guys, step through guys, and just create advantages that way.
Understood. So the footwork and, you know, there's some intelligence there. You know, that's what I mean. And, you know, you've got a lot of guys who, you know, just naturally can get their own shot, you know, just, you know, out athleting people. But, you know, I just from hearing some of the scouting reports and comments, while it's not like he's historic in this measure, it does seem like that one thing that made GG so intriguing in high school was that you could also see there was some thought process. There were some premeditated efforts to get his own shot. So combining that with his natural ability is really, really good. Now, let's get into a bit of, you know, the, hey, here's the intrigue, but also here's proof that there definitely is a lot of work to be done when it comes to making the most, to making what he can do functional. One of the things that immediately stands out to me when looking at GG Jackson, Chip, is the fact that it was a 6.6 assist ratio and a 17.7 turnover ratio. So we're talking about assist to turnover ratio. You know, we talk about Tyus Jones being historically significant at a 5-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. Well, in college, for every one assist that GG Jackson had, he had 3 turnovers. So that definitely leads to, you know, some concerns. But just overall, when you look at his game, Chip, it definitely seems like while the natural ability is there, there's going to be a lot of work that's going to have to be done to make sure the intelligence, the decision-making, and just overall basketball IQ gets it to where you need to be.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. I mean, the one thing when I was watching him play, I mean, I think one thing when you're evaluating, just kind of taking it to a macro level, is it's always hard to completely understand the team context of everything that you're seeing. You don't know if the coach is instructing a player to do something or if that's what their offensive goal is, even though you may not agree with it or whatever. So with that said, watching GG, he just doesn't pass the ball a ton. That assist to turnover, that assist percentage is shockingly low. I've got a stat for you. So he's one of just 4 high major true freshmen since the year 2000 to have a usage rate of 28 or more and an assist percentage of 10 or less. The other 3 guys are Jabari Parker, Cam Thomas from LSU, and Shabazz Muhammad. So, like, it's pretty shocking that a guy is on the ball, has the ball in his hands, is used as much as he is on the offensive end, and generates that few assists. So that was surprising, but he's really just a score first, score second type guy. And I think a lot of that can be chalked up to he played on a horrible South Carolina team. He is extremely young. I mean, literally the youngest player in the 2023 NBA draft. And, you know, he reclassified. He kind of joined the South Carolina team a little bit late. It was just a bad situation. Frankly, reminds me a little bit of the situation that Zaire Williams found himself in at Stanford his freshman season. And I think as we continue to talk about this, we'll find some parallels between the Zaire pick and the GG Jackson pick, obviously one being a lottery pick, the other being a mid-second round pick. But just in terms of their profiles, right? Because I think, as you know probably as well as anybody, when you're checking like statistical indicators and different things that GG would hit, he is far from your prototypical Zach Kleiman draft pick.
And that's where, you know, we'll go a little bit further with this in just a moment, but that is something that definitely stands out. this is only the second time. And, you know, just to back you up on a few things based off what I'm seeing here, if I've got my numbers correct. So not only was G.G. Jackson the youngest player in this year's draft, but from what I'm seeing, I believe this is accurate. I think he's the youngest player that the Grizzlies have ever drafted. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr. was 18 when they drafted him, but Jaren didn't turn 19, you know, back in 2018. He turned 19 in September. G.G. Jackson turns 19 in December of this year. So he's the youngest player, you know, that the Grizzlies have ever drafted. But yes, that is the thing that stands out. And this was only the second time, really, that the Grizzlies took a guy on pure upside rather than going like that statistical model approach that we talked about in our last podcast. And I'll ask you about that, Chip. I mean, it stands to me that, you know, hey, you want to balance it out. They talked about balance this offseason. It's great to keep taking on all these older prospects and you help them have higher ceilings than many perceive. But hey, you need to take a home run every now and then. With this pick, with G.G. Jackson, what is the projection that's out there, Chip? I mean, you compare the guys that you compared him to. I think Cam Thomas is someone that really stands out as, is Cam Thomas kind of like the 90th percentile for a G.G. Jackson when it comes to his NBA career? What do you think we can expect from him in his first few years? What would be a great outcome for him? And do you think there's a high percentage chance he becomes a relevant NBA player for the Grizzlies?
If I was a betting man, I would say he probably does not become a high usage or impactful player for the Grizzlies, but I'm not going to rule it out, and I'm going to give it probably a slightly better chance than I would your standard 45th pick. I think the big thing with G.G. right now is he just needs a lot more reps in a better setting. And I think the Grizzlies are going to be able to provide that with the Memphis Hustle. I mean, you think about kind of the path that he's taken. He was, you know, considered the top prospect in the 2023 high school class, ends up reclassifying to 2022. So, you know, when he's playing grassroots, when he's playing with his high school team, he's the guy, he's got the ball in his hands and he's doing everything right. Well, then he turns around and he goes to South Carolina. It is the exact same thing. They're putting the ball in his hands and they're begging him to go create a play, right? Because Sean, I got to be honest. I didn't know that too many teams could surpass that 2019-2020 Stanford team that Zaire played on in terms of rough watches. But I would like to congratulate the 2022-2023 South Carolina Gamecocks for taking that torch from them and sprinting with it. It's really brutal to watch. Like, there's just not a ton of direction or anything beyond, hey, G.G., here's the ball. Please go make a play for us. And so where I'm going with that is he's been the focal point of everything from, you know, grassroots all the way up through his college career. He needs to be put in a situation where he can be a little bit lower usage player, learn how to play a role, because he's actually pretty decent at spot-up shooting. I think in high school and AAU circuit, he showed quite a bit as like an off-ball finisher, kind of in the dunker spot or short rolls, different things like that. Just stuff that don't show up at all in his college tape. And so like a role for him, I think is probably something along the lines of, I took this from Hoop Intellect on YouTube. I thought he made a couple of really good comparisons.
Yeah.
The two players he said he reminded him of were Rui Hachimura and the Morris twins, Marcus Morris, I think he said specifically. That makes sense to me as like the big 6'8", 6'9", can put the ball on the floor a little bit, get their own shot, play make a little bit, defend some bigger threes and fours. That mold, I think, is the one that we need to realistically look at when we're thinking G.G. Jackson and maybe set aside the like, oh, is this the next Carmelo? Is this the next Paul George? Let's just see if he can be the next like Morris Twin or Rui Hachimura or something like that.
I'm going to go a bit older and deeper cut for you. I think I saw this somewhere, but it's kind of stuck with me. How about Al Harrington? I know that he entered the league at 18 back in the 98-99 season. He had some really good years when it came to shooting the three. But I do think that that's probably what the Grizzlies are looking at with G.G. You know, I do think when we talk about these type of players, Chip, it's the fact that, you know, in the NBA now, a lot of times I know that it's all about offense now. And so naturally what's going to stand out is a player that can get buckets, a player that can score in multiple different ways. He can go out, be a microwave scorer, what have you. But you worry about with those players, as much as they're offering on offense, are they giving it back on defense? Are they giving it back by not offering value elsewhere? And I know it's harder to see them giving it back than seeing them having the success through scoring. That's what everybody watches. But right. To me, that's a bit of a concern when it comes to Gigi, is that even if he does continue to develop, why his ceiling may be is kind of that, you know, taller microwave combo forward off the bench, is because will he ever get to the point to where, while his scoring offers value, he's not giving it back on defense? One thing that did seem intriguing to me is he had a nearly 3% block rate at South Carolina. Do you think, you talked about it being a bit, you know, more productive setting at South Haven, do you think that he can develop those other parts of his game, especially defense? Because if he can have the athleticism to do at his size what he can do on offense, he also has some capabilities on defense, I feel.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there at all. I think, you know, you kind of have to look at on ball, or excuse me, you have to look at defense in two facets, right? There's the on ball stuff and then there's the off ball stuff. I actually thought on ball he was all right. He's not the quickest lateral mover, but he's not slow either. I guess he's average, maybe slightly above average for a guy his size. So he does a pretty decent job of staying in front of guys and not letting people blow by him consistently. I think there's stuff to work with there. And plus, he's just like really big, long guy. Like he uses that length to kind of trap guys in and stay in front of them. So I thought the on-ball stuff was okay. It's got a long way to go. But I thought it was fine. I actually thought he defended the post pretty well, too. Had some guys try to take him inside, use their size against him, and he held his own pretty well. He's got, like, pretty solid functional athleticism in that light. You know, he's got some good core strength, good lower body strength. Like, for a guy that's as young as he is, his body is pretty developed. And so the on-ball stuff is fine. I don't ever see him being a stopper on defense on ball, but I don't think he's ever going to be like a turnstile either and just a total negative. Where I have a lot more questions is when he's off the ball. You know, I one thing, just frankly put, is his motor is hot and cold on off ball, and frankly it's mostly cold, and the flashes of hot are few and far between. He just wasn't interested really in making a whole lot of rotations, often wasn't interested in boxing his guy out. I mean, the amount of times that guys would just straight line drive to the rim and it was his rotation and he never moved his feet was alarming. The amount of times that a rebound would go right over his head and his guy would grab it without, you know, basically minimal resistance was alarming. I thought his positioning was really bad. It just really looked like he didn't know what he was supposed to be doing. And I'm not sure even if he knew what he was supposed to be doing, that he put the effort to go do it. So I think both of those things are fixable. Just try a little bit harder, make an effort, you know, make the right rotation, step in, try to draw a charge, just foul a guy instead of giving him a wide open layup, box out your guy, go jump for a rebound, you know, but also coaching him up on that side of the ball, making sure he understands, hey, this is the position you need to be in. This is your rotation. This is how you close out. You know, this is how you make sure you're not just jumping and giving kind of a half-assed closeout and letting the guy blow right past you. All that stuff is very fixable. And, you know, honestly, you have to at least wonder, or at least throw out there in the interest of fairness, that the load he had to carry on the offensive end almost undoubtedly affected the defensive end and how the effort he was able to put in, because at the end of the day, we're all humans, you know, no matter how good a shape you're in, you have to take some sort of a breather at some point. And when your team is constantly asking you to go make a play on the offensive end, it's understandable that you have to take some plays off defensively, but that you can't do that in the NBA because it will be exposed to a level that he has never seen in high school or college.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the other thing that stands out about Gigi Jackson, is that it is relevant, you know, for those fans, you know, of the team. And, you know, we've seen it discussed, and I'll give credence to it. You know, I talk very much about the fact, and I think the Grizzlies look at it this way as well. Yes, this team absolutely could benefit from a young player who can go out and create his own shot. And I think that you could easily argue that GG Jackson has the best potential as a self-creation option for any of the young Grizzlies that are out there. But there is the aspect of, does he give back on defense what he offered on offense? But I think that with GG, if he could be the guy off the bench eventually that could offer that type of scoring, you live with it, you know, because you know how important that is in today's game. But my other thing about it is that what stands out with GG, you know, you got that potential as that self-creator, a guy who can get buckets. You've also, I know Memphis just loves basketball in general overall. This may be the most highly ranked amateur basketball player that we've ever drafted as well. I mention all that to say the pedigree is incredible when it comes to GG Jackson. But there was also some negativity off the court, some, I don't want to call them attitude issues necessarily, but there wasn't, didn't seem like there was the, you know, most cohesive relationship between GG and his college coaching staff and players. You know, he addressed it. He seemed to handle it maturely after, you know, it was kind of pointed out to him that it needed to be taken care of. So I think you're getting a positive mindset with this kid, someone who knows that things have not worked out the best at this point and wants to make the most of it. But just overall, you talk about that off the ball motor and things like that. From an attitude standpoint, an effort standpoint, hard work standpoint, and things like that, what's your assumption of GG? Do you think that we're going to get the best effort for him to hopefully him becoming the best version of himself?
Yeah, so I'll be honest. When I try to make it a point to just watch some interviews of these guys and just get some level of sense of who they are as a person, and like I think he's got some. Maturing to do, and that is not surprising. Again, he played until, you know, he played the first couple months of college basketball at 17 years old. I was an idiot when I was 17 years old, so he's far more mature than I was at that age. But in the interviews and stuff, he seems to have like a great personality, just like seems like very happy guy, really positive. In fact, you can see it on some of the game film you watch when things aren't going great. He's clapping up with his teammates, you know, he's trying to motivate people. And you're right, he made the mistake at the Instagram live rant where, you know, basically bashing his coaching staff. And I can understand that being concerning for Grizzlies fans when you have a kid from South Carolina who's got Instagram live problems. But I think in general, I think he's seemingly a pretty good dude. Great smile. Loved it when he smiled. It just seemed like an infectious kind of personality. And so, yeah, I buy – okay, I guess I'd bottom line it this way, Sean. I buy the Grizzlies' ability to do background on that type of stuff, and I do not think that they would bring him in, especially in light of everything that happened this past season, if there were any concerns about, you know, how he was going to act off the court, how he was going to act in practice in terms of, you know, his effort, his motor getting better, all that good stuff. I just buy that they do their background on that kind of stuff and they are okay with it. And so if they're okay with it, I suppose us with a lot less knowledge need to also be okay with it.
That makes perfect sense. And that's something, you know, that Zach Kleiman did speak to. So, you know, again, like I say, there, you know, for reasons outside of the draft, you know, Zach Kleiman talked about it. He questioned last year if it truly was needed for the Grizzlies to double down on youth or invest in youth as much as they did. So they backed that up in this draft. You know, in his post-game comments, you know, Zach talked about, you know, the fact that they wanted to focus on this draft. And the reason why they didn't move up from 45 is that they were looking to keep the open roster spot on the roster, but get a guy who was on a two-way. So you could definitely tell that the Grizzlies, you know, but I'm sure they did their due diligence when it came to different prospects. But with what they were looking to do, they knew that, you know, hey, the overall upside of what they were going to get in the guy was probably limited because they wanted that guy on a two-way. But I think they came away with the best option that they could in terms of, you know, a guy from this draft willing to take a two-way who had the highest upside. So it'll definitely be interesting to see what happens with GG Jackson. But Chip, I want to get your opinions now because the Grizzlies have now gone three straight years in which we haven't just had an absolute slam dunk hit awesome draft just from, you know, the initial rookie years of these players. But they do have a collection of young players that I think that they're satisfied with, and I also think definitely can still offer good value as depth to support the Grizzlies' main core moving forward. So I want to play a little game with you. Going to mention seven players, Chip, and I want for you to give me the description of hit, miss, jury still out, in terms of where you think they are in their development since being drafted by the Grizzlies. You ready to go on that?
Let's do it.
All right, so here we go. Vince Williams Jr.
Jury very much still out, but count me as a Vince Williams Jr. believer, in the sense that I think he can have like a John Conchar level of impact on a team. You know, probably never be a starter, may never even be a top eight guy, but like a spot minute wing who can defend and shoot threes. I'm a Vince Williams believer in that sense, but jury very much still out on him.
All right. I'll give you jury still out. Let's see here. Kenneth Lofton Jr.
I mean, I guess if you think of him as an undrafted guy and a two-way guy who now has an NBA contract, there's no other way to say it that he's a hit.
Absolutely.
I don't know that I buy like long-term him being like a real rotation guy, but in terms of maximizing an asset that, you know, you basically got him for free, that's incredible. It's a hit for sure.
Yep. I agree with you. Definitely a hit. David Roddy.
A hit for sure. I think what he did as a rookie being drafted in the 20s and coming in and being able to provide real playoff minutes is really, really impressive, and really excited to see how he develops.
Yep. I'm going to go with hit as well. I will say that I think that there is still a very realistic possibility that of this group of seven, Roddy may wind up being the third or fourth most valuable to the Grizzlies, or at least we hope that's the case. But I'll agree with
sure.
you. We'll go with hit. Santi Aldama.
This is one of the biggest hits, right? I mean, like, it looked like a just total whiff after his rookie year. Although the signs were there. I guess, in summer league, it looked horrible. The summer league before his rookie season was like, holy cow, has this guy ever played basketball before? The G League, I thought he had some flashes with the hustle as a rookie. But then just completely, in my opinion, unexpected leap that he took his second year is there's no way to classify that as number 30th pick as anything other than a hit. And I'm super excited, to see how year three goes for him.
Zaire Williams.
This is tough. I guess we will go miss. But I almost want to say jury out leaning miss. Because the rookie year was so encouraging. Looked like a guy who could play a role, defend on ball, shoot threes, and create a little bit. Like, I really think Zaire's a pretty good passer, too. I don't know what happened, but it seems like the second year just never got off the ground and, was just okay in the G League. Like, this is it. His career is very much at a crossroads. Maybe not so much his NBA career, but at the very least, his Grizzlies career is at a crossroads going into next season, where if he doesn't establish himself as a rotation guy, I'd be surprised if he shows up for a year four in Memphis.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that I'll say. Well, we'll get to Zaire here in just a moment. Jake LaRavia.
Jerry very much still out, because I thought he looked so good the first 15 or 20 games when he played, and then picked up an injury. Never found his way back into the rotation. Looked pretty good in the G League, honestly. Put up some really nice numbers. The film looked pretty good. And then for some reason, Sean, I don't know. The fan base seemingly just turned on him and labeled him a bust. And I don't really know who saw a bust, because like the times he actually put on a Memphis Grizzlies uniform and played basketball, I thought he looked like he belonged. The problem was he just got hurt and didn't give us enough of those minutes. So I don't know how we can say anything other than Jerry very much out on Jake.
Yeah, when he was getting consistent playing time is the main thing, because to your point, if you look at those first 20 games, LaRavia was shooting well from three. The thing that stood out to me about LaRavia, Chip, that I haven't seen, in a rookie besides maybe Santi over the past few years, there were multiple times where in a 90-second span of game time, LaRavia made a difference. Like a couple of threes, a couple of good passes. You could see the ability for him to add value outside of, just shooting. But I also think that his shot may have the highest upside of being the most consistent of any of this group. So I'm with you.
I agree.
When you said for Zaire, It was jury still out, but leaning towards a miss. I can agree with that. With Jake, I think it's jury still out, leaning towards a hit. And that gets me to my overall point, is that, you know, you kind of can get, I said seven, but you're looking at six of these players, and you kind of can put them in three different groups, right? You've got Zaire, and if you want to throw Gigi in there, so we'll include Gigi here to make it seven. So with Zaire and Gigi, you've got those high upside swings. Now, they're a bit different. Zaire, I think, has upside when it comes to outside of scoring value, defense, passing, spot up shooting. Gigi's value very much is as a scorer. So you've got those high upside swings. I think that you've got a bit older prospect that you know a bit more about that can offer variety in different ways in Laravia and Roddy as well as Santi. That group's there. And then you've got the, you know, end of the rotation depth in Lofton and Vince Williams. I do applaud the Grizzlies in their ability to getting these different guys who will continue waves of depth that come in. Because like you mentioned, Vince Williams could be a replacement for Conchar if he was traded. You've got decisions coming up on Xavier Tillman and others. Could Kenneth Lofton step in for them? If something happens with Zaire where potentially you trade him, Gigi Jackson becomes your high upside play. The Grizzlies have continued to do a good job of layering that depth, and I think that gives them a better chance of something eventually hitting outside of Santi. Would you agree?
I would, completely. I'm actually glad we did this exercise. I think that, you know, the front office, from some people, I think in general, if you were to just ask your average Grizzlies fan if they're satisfied with the job the front office has done, I think resoundingly you'd get a positive reaction, positive feedback. There are certainly a few, though, that are you know, questioning, you know, Kleiman and the front office and some of the decisions they made. I think we have to keep this whole thing into perspective of, like, you know, the core of this team is still 25 and under. They've done nothing but continue to climb in the regular season standings, their seeding. I know that they didn't make it out of the first round this year, but in general, the steps are being made in a positive direction with a very, very young core. And they just went out and traded for Marcus Smart, the defensive player of the year two seasons ago, who fills multiple needs. And then you look at kind of the exercise we just did and the draft picks, and it's fair to say that maybe none of these guys end up being home run long-term starters, though I think a couple of them probably have a chance to do that. But you have to supplement your star level talent with rotation players, and you need to do it on cheap contracts as you have to continue to pay your stars more and more. I think a great example of that, two things really. One, I think that's something the G&G Grizzlies did very, very poorly. They did not draft well. They were never able to bring those young, cheap players in that could be productive to supplement, you know, the core four and those guys. And then two, you look at a team that just won the championship, the Denver Nuggets, making a concerted effort to trade back into the 20s and the 30s, acquire multiple picks, because they understand how important it is to find guys in that range who can play with your rotation that you can get on cheaper contracts. So, yeah, I know that it's not like maybe you're not drafting Desmond Bane. Maybe none of these guys are even like a Brandon Clark level hit in the 20s. But I think that a few of these guys are going to be able to contribute, and we've seen several of them already contribute in meaningful ways.
And that's the other interesting thing that comes to it, because I think now, you know, this was the first time that, you know, we had not seen Zach Kleiman make more of, you know, make or gain more from draft night than he originally had. You know, this was the first time where we didn't see, you know, this is the first time we saw Zach Kleiman operate without a first round pick. But I asked him after the draft, you know, as your time evolves, this being his fifth draft now, does your perspective change as your roster evolves? And he said, no, you know, the philosophy really doesn't change, but just in this situation, it made sense not to commit to a roster spot. I bring that up, Chip, because, you know, one thing that we now hear, the Grizzlies do have one 2024 first round pick left now after trading the Golden State pick. But first off, your opinion on the 2024 draft. It seems as if that's supposed to be one of the weaker drafts that we've seen in a while. And for that reason, I think that over the next, you know, probably 1 to 2 years, we may not see the Grizzlies as invested as in the draft as they have been over time. And that just naturally happens as your roster gets older and you continue to develop the picks that you've already made. It does seem like that's lining up to be that way. The weakness of the 24 draft, plus the need for trades to supplement the roster. Do you think we're probably going to go through a bit of a lull here where the Grizzlies may not invest as much in the draft as they have in the past?
I think that's possible. In regards to the 24 draft, I think the reason everyone says it's weak, and they're not wrong. I think it's weak at the top. There's not necessarily a guy that's a guaranteed start or anything, or really even got a ton of guys with a bunch of all-star potential. I think the depth of the draft, we will learn a lot more about that next year. It's very rare that a draft just has zero depth and zero stars and things like that. So there's no star power. There's no Scoot. There's no Victor Wembanyama. There's probably really even no Thompson twins. But I think we will learn a lot more about, you know, is pick 20 going to be worth something as we get well into the college basketball and G League and, you know, everywhere that everyone plays seasons. And so, yeah, I mean, with that said, I think it's entirely possible that we could see much less focus on the draft from that perspective. And I think that's a bit of a natural thing in terms of you're trying to take that next step from being a team that's a first, second round team to maybe making a leap into the conference finals or even NBA finals. And so you're trying to get older. You're trying to target different players. The rebuild phase is kind of over. You have your core. You know what you're working with moving forward. Now, how do you maximize all these pieces and maybe consolidate some of them into a little bit higher level of a player? I think an underrated aspect of the Marcus Smart acquisition is that the Grizzlies do have all their own first-round picks moving forward. So many of the teams that they're competing against to win, you know, conference finals and NBA finals, they have already sent out a lot of the picks that they can make over the next several years to try to make the leaps that the Grizzlies are also trying to make. So they still have some of that flexibility, plus some of the young guys to be able to go get guys if something presents themselves in the market. You know, they're not as strong as they once were in that sense, but still strong considering that this team was just the two seed in the West. So I guess a long-winded way of saying, yeah, I think the way to say it is the era of Kleiman going all in, trading up, acquiring as many picks as possible is probably over. But I think that's just natural in the team building, and it signals, hey, the Grizzlies are now in a different phase of let's work towards contending, and we will supplement with the draft as best as we can.
And that makes perfect sense that it's going to happen over the next 1 to 2 years. But I know that everyone, you know, the Marcus Smart trade was great. You know, I mentioned it, you know, on, you know, the Pyro. I didn't mention it. I did a little bit of research on the Marcus Smart trade after it was done. It definitely appears to be the most all-in move that the Grizzlies have ever made in terms of a trade. What I mean by that is that the last 2 years are really the only times the Grizzlies have sent out multiple first-round picks in a move to acquire a player. They did it to acquire Laravia in the 22 draft. They did it to acquire, you know, Smart this past year. I definitely do think there is a bigger move on the horizon, not necessarily this year, but I do not think that this Marcus Smart trade is the biggest all-in trade this Grizzlies team is going to make. I think they make a bigger one in time to truly go after a title 2 to 3 years down the line. But I will say this, Jeff, and we'll end with this. I do also think that anyone that thinks that we're going to go all in, kind of like, you know, the Nets did or the Suns did, trading all our first-round picks, pick swaps and all that, I don't see the Grizzlies doing that. Because I do see, as time goes on, with our draft and developed success, getting players on those first-round picks who have a high chance of becoming rotation players on cheap contracts, that's going to be extremely important for us to be able to keep our title contention window as open as possible. Do you get that sense as well? I think we'll use a first of those first-round picks to go make a big move, but I do also want to caution and you know, endorse this Grizzlies team with their draft and development success, them holding on to their first-round picks and making them good rotation players, that's going to be extremely important as this roster continues to get more expensive.
Yeah, I think kind of as I'm thinking about it too, you know, teams of like the Miami Heat, the Los Angeles Lakers, you know, even teams in New York, Brooklyn, those are free agent destinations, quote unquote, right? Those are the desirable markets that everyone wants to live in the NBA. So those teams can kind of punt on the draft in the sense of, you know, trading picks, trading future swaps, different things like that, because they know they can be very active and attractive in the buyout market and in the veteran minimum market, because those are desirable places to live and chase championships towards the end of your career. The Grizzlies will just never be that. So in some sense, probably they have to operate a little bit smarter from the draft perspective and how they fill out the back end of their rotation, more so than some teams, you know, like we said, Heat, Lakers, the New York teams, things like that. So yeah, it's still incredibly important. And I think, you know, everyone should feel pretty good about the guy calling shots and his team that he's put together, because they have been so good around the margins at not just the draft, but also in trades. I mean, I think it's very – you go back and look at all the trades that they've made throughout their tenure, and it's all pretty impressive, and a lot of them have compounded upon one another. You look at, you know, take the David Roddy, DeAnthony Melton swap, for example. It ended up that allowed them to then acquire Luke Kennard. You go look at the tree of everything that happened after the Mike Conley trade. It's incredible. Like all the different things, all the different assets and players they acquired from the Mike Conley deal. So yeah, I think operating at the margins is one thing this front office does extremely well. And the one thing we're all still waiting on a little bit is that massive swing to push them into full-on contention. And I think the Marcus Smart trade was a pretty sizable swing, but I'm completely in lockstep with you that at some point they are probably going to do something significantly bigger than that even, and really try to push this team into a championship window.
Absolutely. And the good thing about it is that we're just at the beginning still. You know, the players that we talked about specifically in this podcast, you know, they're all the players on our roster that are 23 and younger. But the thing is that our core is just going to be 24 and 25 years old next year. So we're still just at the beginning of this opportunity. But Chip, so much great stuff. If you are listening on the GBB Live podcast, make sure to check out Chip's excellent article on GGG Jackson over at BluffCityMedia.co. And make sure that you become a Bluff City Insider, because this is the type of stuff that you get. You're going to get the specifics even more than on this podcast from Chip's excellent insight. So make sure to chip out Chip's great workout. Make sure to check out BluffCityMedia.co and become an insider. And Chip, is there anything else you want to promote? I know that the draft is now done, but anything that you want to promote as time goes on and the rest of this offseason unfolds?
Yeah, my hope is to continue to write about a lot of the guys we've talked about and just what it's going to look like for them going into this 2023 season. Obviously, we've got Summer League coming up. That is one of my favorite events. I will be excited to write about everybody participating in Summer League. And I actually think for the first time in a while, we have a guy who will thrive in the Summer League setting in GG Jackson. That is kind of his area, right? The more just like roll the ball out there and go play some hoops. Like that's what that guy's really good at. So write probably some more about him, how he looks in Summer League, different things like that. And Sean, I wanted to kind of, I guess, bottom line this entire podcast and just kind of an overarching thought as the one that kept popping in my head about GG. And I go deeper into this on the article. So I appreciate the plug there. I think you should all go check it out. I put quite a bit of work into it, but I think right now for GG Jackson, he is a shot creator, and that's great. He hits some very high-level shots, some very difficult shots, but he also settles for a lot of very difficult shots, and he bails the defense out by not going all the way to the rim or not attracting a second defender and finding an open man. And so the key thing for me for GG to become a certified, you know, rotation NBA-level player, he's going to have to take his shot creation and evolve that into legitimate advantage and really just advantage creation for himself and for his team. And so how he does that, how the Grizzlies develop that part of his game over the next couple of seasons, I will be very excited to watch because the kid's got a ton of talent, but he's got a long way to go before we see that potential fully realized.
And the thing that I'll add to that is that, you know, we talk about the fact, you know, when we look at the Grizzlies and the statistical, you know, trends that they typically look at when it comes to these draft prospects, you would think, okay, well, maybe the fact that the Grizzlies took a guy who doesn't have that, a guy who is much more of a project, much more raw, needs much more work on things than guys we've drafted in the past, that would mean the Grizzlies may not be as prepared to help a guy like that be a hit. But I'll actually go on the contrary to say that because of how much the Grizzlies value, you know, shot value, how much they value smart shot selection, and that being one of the biggest swing skill set boxes for GG to check to be able to truly be something in the NBA, I think that the Grizzlies are actually one of the better places for him to have landed, for him to meet some type of relevant NBA career. So that's really going to be exciting to watch. Chip, it's been an absolute pleasure as always. Thank you so much. We'll more than likely, as a matter of fact, I'll guarantee it, we will have you on the show again before the season starts to really start to look more at, you know, hopefully once we get some more reports about development and things like that for these guys, looking at this young group again going ahead in the 2023-2024 season. Thanks for your time, Chip.
Of course. Looking forward to it, and always appreciate the conversation, Sean. This is fun.
Hey, always a pleasure on my end as well, Chip. Hopefully you'll be able to get some rest this week after the busy few weeks that you've had, man. For Chip Williams, my name's Sean Coleman. Thanks so much for tuning into GB Live, one of two episodes of GBB Live this morning and evening and morning for you to enjoy. We'll talk to you again soon here on GBB Live.